And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me. Willie Donick?
Good morning.
That's him. Mark East behind the glass.
What's happy up? Friday, everybody.
Yeah, happy Friday. End of the week. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Last night, we said it yesterday on the show. We had Barry Melrose on the program, and we talked about would the Bruins finish off the job, and indeed they did. In fact, we even said that yesterday. That was kind of, I think my exact words were, I just have a feeling the Bruins are going to go on and finish this off, and indeed they did. They pitched the shutout, and they get the win. Their power play has been off the charts in the postseason. It's been the best by anybody, and it's really not even close, and therefore they just punched their ticket into the Stanley Cup Final. Now, they'll have to sit and wait and see how things shake out in the Western Conference. As you said yesterday, you still believe this thing's going seven. If that's the case, they may be waiting for a while. May not play again for, what, a week?
Yeah, it could be a while.
They just have three games.
Could be a while, yeah.
They got four. If they go seven, they got to go four more games. So it'll be over a week.
And, you know, there have been two teams. Not that this is going to happen to the Bruins necessarily, but there have been two teams that have swept, sat out for a while, and then got swept. The Islanders and then the Hurricanes,
yes.
Which is very rare. Very, very rare for anybody to do that, but especially two in one playoff season.
Mm-hmm.
So you do wonder, the rest versus rust. I'm sure the Bruins would love to, you know, have a couple of days off and then go right back and play. They're playing so well. When you're in a groove, you don't want to not play.
Well, ask the Colorado Rockies. I mean, I think they will tell you.
Well, there's a classic example there.
They cried foul when they had to wait, what, like 9 days?
Yeah, took a long time.
Before they started the World Series, and they're like, you know, what's the most you have in a baseball season? One day off? We waited over a week to play game one of the World Series.
This was back in 2007. I think they won, the Rockies, I'd have to go back and check, but like 21 out of 22. Like,
yes, they were on fire.
A miraculous run at the end of the regular season to squeeze into the playoffs, and then swept the first two rounds of the playoffs, and then had to sit and wait, and then they got swept by the Red Sox, who played a seven-game series against the Indians. They were down 3-1 in that series, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Came back and won it, and then swept the Rockies in the World Series.
There's another that's a prime example. Got swept, and they were the hottest team in baseball, and it wasn't even close. And they set out for, it was like 8 or 9 days before they played game one of the World Series, and they were never the same. And of course, that's immediately what everybody said. Screwed over the Rockies! You made them sit and wait. There's no reason why they should have waited that long to play the World Series.
Some of it's out of your control.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, in 07, it seemed like they could have started. Like, some leagues are flexible. Like, as soon as the previous round's over, they'll start the next round. But, like, I think baseball set the dates of the World Series. And even the Red Sox, after beating the Indians, had a couple of days where it's like they – it could have started. I don't know.
But just
sometimes
think about
they can do it.
Game four is tonight. Game four. If indeed this thing stretches
I think it's going to seven.
Then
these two teams are so evenly matched.
They don't play back-to-back. So it's got to be at least every other day. So think about that.
Yeah, they're going to have plenty of time.
They're going to be sitting for a while. I will tell you this, and I wanted to bring this up because I know you have HBO, right?
I do.
Last night, after the Bruins just finished off the Hurricanes, then you had the Warriors. I did watch that. The Warriors, and they could have easily lost that game. It could have been tied at one going back to Portland. But they found a way late.
Missed a chance. Boy, the Blazers had a chance.
And then, you know, Lillard gets the ball stripped at the end.
It's a great play.
That's that, yeah.
Great defense.
Iguodala, great play.
Imagine having that guy guard you. Guy's arms are like 100 feet long.
Yeah.
He's a great defender.
That's what they say. Who was I talking? Oh, I think it's Kawhi Leonard. They say, like, his arms, he's like 7'6" with his arms and his hands.
Yeah.
When you hear me say meat hooks, I mean, I think he can, they said he can palm a basketball with like three fingers. I mean, that's how his hands are just massive. massive, massive hands, like Shaq hands, Kawhi Leonard.
That was a good game. I have to say, you know, I was worried that that series would be a snoozer, but the Seth Curry, Steph Curry was a pretty cool thing last night. Seth Curry had a great game, hit some huge shots. The Blazers had a chance. Oh, that was a bummer. If they could have stolen that game, they missed a chance to get a split. Now, maybe, but at least maybe it gives you hope that they can go back to Portland and win a couple of games. We'll see.
Well,
because Durant's not playing anytime soon.
No, he's. I don't think he's playing in this series.
That's the speculation.
Yeah. Well, he's out for game three and four,
right,
so he's not traveling with the team this week.
They said that, so we know that.
I would be surprised if he played in this series. So I wanted to go to bed after everything had wrapped up. By the way, Vanderbilt played forever last night. Crazy game. We had Tim Corbin on the show yesterday.
You know, we had the idea of having Maggie Corbin on the show sometime. I was thinking to myself, boy, if they lose this game, this may not be the best week to try this. They had a 9-0 lead in Lexington against Kentucky, who, by the way, is 7-20.
Yeah, they're not good this year.
They're having a bad year. They're fighting just to get into the SEC tournament. Kentucky scored 10 unanswered runs. And I would have to say Vanderbilt handed them a good portion of those runs. They lost a ball in the dusk, the lights. I don't know what happened. That cost them two runs on a fly, routine fly ball with two outs. They kept walking guys and hitting guys. The next thing you know, it's 10-9, and then the rain hits. And they delayed it for, what, at least an hour and a half, something like that.
It went on for a long
time.
Maybe
closer to 2 hours by the time they got it started. And only because school's out, they could resume it last night. And Vanderbilt rallied to win. And then they had a big ninth inning. 16-10 was the final. So it ended up being, if you only saw the final score.
It was not really indicative of the game.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go to bed after everything kind of wrapped up, but I couldn't. I just couldn't sleep. It was just one of those nights, and that happens. And I just happened to be flipping through the channels, and I've got HBO and Showtime, honestly, just for a lot of the sports programming. Everybody knows, I've said it here on the show, I love Hard Knocks. I love these documentaries. I love the NFL show on Showtime. I mean, I know I like to watch movies too, but I really don't have them for movies. I'm glad I have them because I do watch Billions. I love that show. But when they put a lot of sports programming on HBO and Showtime, I watch. And Willie, I just happened to stumble in right at the beginning. And little did I know, I had no idea. There was no chance I was going to bed now. At the Heart of Gold, inside the USA Gymnastics scandal.
I've watched it.
Have you watched it?
I have.
Is it not mind-blowing?
Mind-blowing.
I mean, mind-blowing beyond comprehension, right? Like, we've read it, we've talked about it. I clearly did not do a deep, deep dive into it until I watched this documentary. If you have HBO, I would highly, well, I don't know, some people may not even want to see it. It's just, it's tough at times to watch, but if you can stomach it,
right,
I would highly recommend it. It will blow your mind at the depths of how bad, one, Larry Nassar was the devil. I mean, he's a bad, bad, you're talking about a rotten egg of a human being. Larry Nassar is that. But to me, the sickening part of all this is just the adults, the people in charge, the people who get paid gobs of money to be in charge and run institutions and companies and make tough decisions, what they did, and coaches to overlook everything and basically slough everything off and let this culture go on for a long time on their watch. It is hard for me to even fathom, to even process that, how adults could do that, because they're just as much responsible to me as Larry Nassar. And I get it. He did the acts, and it's disgusting. But the fact that they knew about it and did nothing about it, in fact, some at times when you watch this, went out of their way to basically hide it and protect it and tell the girls it's not what you think. I don't think I've ever, my neck is hurting from shaking my head watching that documentary. But if you really want to learn about the story that we've all heard about, the $500 million lawsuit that went to these women that deserved every bit of it, and then you watch the court scenes, holy cow.
I watched it, and I do struggle with, you know, there are people that say, I can't make myself watch it. It's just too disturbing. But that's why we have to watch it. That's why, you know, I don't say you have to watch it. That's why you should watch it, because only when you watch it do you really feel the real story, right? And you obviously you learn more details about what was going on, and it gets you angry. Right? It has you saying, I have a daughter. You know, it has you thinking, you know, people who have daughters, you know, people that have abused power, and you know, people that look the other way when something not right is going on. But this is all of those forces coming at you at once in such extreme fashion. It makes you angry watching it, right?
And I don't have a daughter. I couldn't imagine. All the parents that watch this that have daughters, some of them 6 years old. Are you kidding me? It's by the way, Michigan State. Oh my gosh, USA Gymnastics. Oh my gosh, you should be so incredibly ashamed of yourselves. It's disgusting what that university did and USA Gymnastics. Luckily. And they had no choice because of these brave women. And by the way, I loved the judge in this case.
Boy, she
she was, I mean, vicious to Larry Nassar, and good for her. But all these people that are, everybody that was basically the forefront of this story, they have cleaned house. They're all gone. Everybody. Any remnant at Michigan State or USA Gymnastics, they're long gone. They are out of the picture. You know, resigned, fired, whatever you want to call it. They cleaned house at Michigan State and USA Gymnastics, they should have.
It's a powerful documentary. If you have HBO, it's worth watching. And the thing that really, to me, the thing that stung the most is the year, what was it, 2017 was when all this was hitting. Is that right? Whatever it was. This could have been stopped in 1997, right?
Oh, yeah, it's saying it's
because
two
he
decades.
Should have been if Michigan State went through not even the university, just if the gymnastics coach, the athletic director,
how about
director,
the women's gymnastics coach at Michigan State?
Brutal.
Oh my gosh.
1997 is when that should have been done. He should have been gone, never coaching again or never treating athletes again after that.
Yeah.
That should have been all there was to it right there. And instead, 20 years later, you have this massive mound.
Did you find yourself at any point in the documentary going, how much more proof do they need? Like, how many more things have to happen to Larry Nassar for these organizations to get rid of him? He was a cockroach. They could not get rid of him. It was unbelievable. So if you have HBO and you really want to know what this story was about, At the Heart of Gold, Inside the USA Gymnastics Scandal, kudos to these women, these brave women, these girls that stood up there in court, and boy, did they. I mean, he had to do it for a week. He had to sit there and listen to them talk right to him, and it was unbelievable. And the judge, you'll become a fan of the judge because she absolutely torched Nassar. He wrote a letter to her, and she just used every bit of that to just throw the book at him. Which, like I said, he deserved every bit of it. But you might want to check it out if you have HBO. It may be a little bit disturbing at times, especially if you have a daughter or daughters. But if you really want to learn about this, boy, it's right there in that documentary on HBO. We'll come back. Chris Dortch from Blue Ribbon. We're going to talk about the NBA draft. We went to Memphis yesterday. Ja Morant. Talk about some of these prospects. What is and what should these guys from Tennessee, some of the guys in the SEC that we watched. We'll talk about all that with Chris Dortch on the other side. Darren and Donick, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Well, my decision is that I'm going to stay in the NBA draft after receiving this feedback from NBA teams and how I performed and what I'm hearing. I feel confident in myself and my game, as well as what I'm hearing from teams, and I'm excited to take this next step in my journey. To Vol fans, honestly, I just want to thank you, because there's not much more I can say, because you guys have been there for me. You've been amazing to me, and it's been a great 3 years. It's been a great process. I want to thank my teammates, my coaches, as well as you all, because without you all, I wouldn't be where I am at today. And please continue to guide me, and please be there for me, because Vol Nation has the best support in the world.
There you go, Grant Williams. He is indeed going to stick it out. He will not return to Rick Barnes and the Vols next year. He is going to test the waters in the NBA, and right now it looks like depends on where you look, maybe could sneak into late first round, but looks like more like early second round. Back here on Darren and Donick, let's talk to the man that can help us with all that and more. Chris Storch is on the line with us from Blue Ribbon. It's fantastic read if you want to know anything and everything about your favorite team. Chris, how you doing?
I'm well, guys. The basketball season never ends, does it?
I'm sorry, say that again?
The basketball season seems like it never ends anymore.
And people were clearly tuned in to the draft lottery. I saw the ratings were the best they've been in 16 years, I think I saw. So people were very curious to see how this would play out. Chris, one, let's just start with Grant Williams. You heard the clip. Where do you anticipate him going, and what do you think, in your opinion, what kind of pro can he be?
Well, you know, Rick Barnes is always likened him to a kid he had at Texas, P.J. Tucker, who is with the Houston Rockets and has had a long and productive NBA career. I think I saw where he makes $8 million a year. I'd get by on that if I clip coupons, I think. And so that's a pretty good living, and that's kind of what I see Grant as. And I believe that he believes, and has been told from reputable sources, that he's the number one pick. Otherwise, I don't know that he would have chanced it, even though he's already got his degree. Guys, Grant is a kid who he's going to be a millionaire no matter what he does. He's the most well-rounded, pleasant to be around, polite, intelligent kid that I've ever been around in all the years I've covered college basketball, and I'm convinced that he couldn't make a wrong move. I'm a student of history, though, and for that, I hate to see him go. He would have probably been preseason National Player of the Year, and he had a chance to do something that only two players in the history of the SEC has done, and that's been three-time SEC Player of the Year, and the only two that have done that are Bernard and Pistol, guys that only need one name.
Yeah, well, that means you're pretty good, right? We went to Memphis yesterday, and we had Pete Pranica on, and just to see if it's a no-brainer that it's going to be Ja Morant, and it looks like all signs are pointing toward the Grizzlies taking Ja Morant. We were amazed by him last year at Murray. But, Chris, second overall, there'll be huge expectations. I guess the question I have is he a franchise changer? Because the Grizzlies certainly could use a franchise changer moving forward. What do you think?
Well, you know, he's one of the best stories. I've been writing a draft column focusing on college players for NBA.com for 9 years now, and I always like to write about guys that kind of came out of nowhere, maybe under-recruited in college, and certainly epitomizes the word sleeper. He's come so far so fast. He's got such amazing gifts, not just his explosiveness, but his court vision. I think he's a guy that could truly be transformative. You know, he's a good rebounder for his position. I think the comparison is Russell Westbrook. I don't think that's ridiculous at all.
Wow. Well, there's your answer. That would be a big yes. A guy we're going to have on the show next week after he goes through this experience, and I just want to get your take on Dylan Windler. Where do you see him going, and how do you think he translates to the next level?
I love Dylan Windler. Happened to write something about him this year for NBA.com, and I think in terms of the new NBA, he's got a lot of skills they look for. First of all, he's long, shoots it from three really well, is a good rebounder, has been taught to hit to the rim. Rick Byrd's offense either got to the rim or took threes. So, you know, it's a pace and space offense that they're playing in that league now, and I think he'll excel in it. The other thing, you know, like Grant Williams, he's a good kid, a smart kid. He'll be good in the locker room, good in the community. I've seen some drafts most recently. I think Sports Illustrated came out, and I respect what they do. I see him as a first rounder.
Ooh,
and
okay.
Certainly an early second rounder. I think he's going to have a productive career in the NBA.
Interesting. Yeah, most of the mocks I've looked at had Grant Williams and Dylan Windler like right early on in the second round, but that would be something if one or both could sneak in to the lower first round. It seems like everybody's saying it's the big three and then everybody else, Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, and R.J. Barrett. But you know how this works. I mean, Giannis was the 15th pick overall. It's not always the first or second pick overall that ends up being really, really good players in the NBA. Maybe, Chris, a couple of other guys that we should pay close attention to, do you think that are going to go in the first round that are going to be real impact players at the next level?
I'm going to give you one. This is my favorite one. Nasir Little from North Carolina.
Okay.
He was the second overall rated player in last year's high school class. He was only the fifth player at the time to be MVP of the Jordan Brand McDonald's All-Star Games. He gets to Carolina. You know, he's compared favorably to R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson, but he doesn't quite have the year, you know, because he's playing behind three studs at Carolina. So, you know, naturally the press wants to make something out of a nothing, and they thought, you know, there's controversy there, but I'm doing a piece on him now. This kid, they call him the philosopher. He handled that as well as anybody could. He just got this kind of laissez-faire attitude. It's like, what is will be. And he's a hard worker. He's got unbelievable measurables as far as his size. I think he can guard three positions in the NBA, maybe four, and probably play both forward spots. 7'1" wingspan, great leaper, great kid, dedicated to his craft. So I think there's a guy who is going. I've seen him going as far as 17, 18. I think he'll blow up past. If he goes that far, he'll blow up past that, and people will wish they hadn't passed on him.
Talking to Chris Dortch from Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook, contributing to NBA.com with the NBA draft coming up here now that the lottery is set. A lot of local angles, of course, with Memphis having the number two pick. We watched Ja Morant. He's semi-local. And then we just mentioned Windler, Grant Williams. The one guy we haven't talked about, Chris, is, of course, Darius Garland, who doesn't appear to have lost any stock at all with the injury. And that's what people were saying, and that's what I think worried a lot of Vanderbilt fans. The minute he got hurt, you were thinking, boy, he may have played his last game for the Commodores, because you kept hearing all this, that he projected so high in this particular draft.
Yeah, Willie, I've always loved the kid, even though we saw very little of him. I think what the pros like is he's got that it factor, and you know what that means because you played. It means that you can make players around you better. He's able to get his own shot, but because of that, people are fearful of him. And because of that, he's a good setup man too, a good facilitator. So, I'm glad. I think they made the right decision for him. You know, it wasn't a severe knee injury by today's standards with the advancements in surgeries and stuff. But they did something different. Instead of removing the torn meniscus, they repaired it. They didn't want him to be bone on bone years from now. And I think that was a mature and intelligent decision. And I think he's, you know, he was practicing in Atlanta in January or February. So he was full bore, ready to go. And I think NBA teams have known that for months.
So how high do you think he could go? Could I've seen him as high as number four. Is that feasible, or do you think it might be a couple of slots below that?
Well, you know, that would be the Lakers, I think. And,
yeah.
And, you know, they've got Wall already. I just don't understand why they would want to do that since they've got a point guard. But, you know, the league is different. I mean, you've got several guys who can handle the ball on the floor. And as I said, Darius is a scoring point. So, you know, maybe they're fine with that. But, yeah, he's definitely that good. Before Ja Morant came along, everybody thought he was the best point guard in the country. So, you know, the Vandy staff thought he could put together Trae Young numbers. And you remember what Trae Young did 2 years ago. He would have been had he not been hurt. Now, the other guy we haven't talked about, Jordan Bone, is the one that that's really kind of made the headlines here recently.
Yeah. So tell us, I was thinking of Bone and also Simi Chatu, who, of course, had a very disappointing year at Vanderbilt, but has decided to jump in. He's going to hope to do well in some of these workouts and have his stock go up. He's got some health issues, I would think, too, because he's coming off that ACL. So give us your thought on those two guys in particular.
Well, Chatu, I've not seen in the mock drafts, and I don't know. That mock drafts aren't everything, and not sports writers that are call themselves sports writers that do these things are wired into it, you know.
I can't imagine him getting drafted just based on what we've seen on the court. Now, you know, people project ahead.
Yeah, the Vandy staff had trouble controlling him. You know, he's got some gifts, but he's got some things that some negatives that outweigh those. As far as Jordan Bone, I think, guys, he's been adamant about it for weeks. I think he's been all in for weeks. And I wrote a piece that's on my website, my personal website, chrisdorch.info. It was a 3,000-word monster on Jordan Bone. And I really got into it and started talking about the origins of him and his athleticism. And I found out then that, you know, he would dunk in practice. He would never show this in games, but he would throw down some dunks in practice that just freaked out his teammates. They couldn't believe it. And then if you look at these numbers yesterday, I mean, historically, you look at, like, Max Vert, higher than Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook, three-quarter sprint, higher than both of those guys. You know, he had the best Max, second-best Max Vert, best standing vertical in the combine, and he led in the shuttle run. He led in the lane agility. Now, yeah, these are just numbers. Can he run a team? I think so, but historically speaking, you're comparing his explosion and his athleticism with guys like D. Rose and Westbrook, and I just think that bodes well, and I've always liked him as a point guard, Willie. He flew past this year against Mississippi State. He was at half court. Kyle Alexander was streaking toward the rim. One of those one-handed bounce passes that John Lucas used to throw. And I said, the guy's a pro, and I think he'll get drafted.
Will Naz Reid make more money at this level, or is he going to take a pay cut, you think? All right, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. It's a joke.
That's a good one, though. You know, Nas will probably go. I don't know that he was 100% polished and ready, and I'm seeing him. I don't think I've seen him in any of the first rounds in any of the mocks that I've looked at. Again, that doesn't mean everything. What means the most, guys, are these next few weeks in the run-up to the draft when the NBA teams bring them in. They let them scrimmage against their peers. There's no hiding there. Some agents, I guess, won't let their guys do that. But the one thing that they can't hide is the personal interviews and the background checks. And, you know, character comes to the forefront. I think that's why Grant Williams has just wowed everybody in Chicago. And I think that that's the reason he went ahead and declared so quickly.
Chris, good stuff as always. Appreciate the visit, and we'll do it again soon.
Bye, guys. Take care.
Chris Dortch from Blue Ribbon. You can also check out his work on NBA.com. You just heard it. He's been doing stuff around the draft for almost a decade. We'll come back. More of Darren and Donick next. I brought up the documentary at the beginning of the show on HBO. Speaking of HBO, it's getting close or closer. Hard Knocks. I love it. Willie, there are odds being released. They have not announced who's going to be the Hard Knocks subject this year. There are courtesy of our buddy Jimmy Shapiro.
Why?
Sports betting AG.
Why?
Who is the favorite?
Why?
For
I don't care.
Year's? You should.
I don't
you
care.
You really should.
When they tell me, that'll be fine.
You should really.
I'm not waiting with bated breath.
You can lay money on
who
this.
The favorite
you
is.
You can lay money on this. You could win.
This is ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to make the list.
Today, that's coming up at noon.
I mean, you just may have made the list.
And I've got one. I told you this. I've been holding on to this one this week. I have no idea how people will feel about it. I don't. I don't know if it'll be, people will be like, yeah, that's a good one. Or people are like, you know, how dare you? You can't do that. I don't know what the reaction will be. I'll be curious to see how it plays out. Because we've all experienced what I'm going to put on the list. We've all experienced
okay.
this.
You're changing the subject. Do you feel bad that you've put this out there, the
no,
favorite for
no,
Hard Knocks?
No,
I mean,
this
come
is,
on.
This is hard-hitting stuff right here.
Let's have the favorite for what you're going to have for lunch today.
No, this is good. People, there's a lot of people that want to know.
Well, don't look at me. I can't save you.
I mean, since you guys are going to poo-poo this, I'll just go on and let the cat out of the bag.
I'm excited for Hard Knocks.
The Redskins are the favorite. So Josh Upton will be very excited about that. The Redskins, a plus 125. The Raiders, the second favorite.
That's the Hard Knocks I want to see.
At plus 250. I think everybody wants to see the Raiders, right?
That should be the favorite.
To see, I mean, they get Antonio Brown.
You got Antonio Brown. You got John Gruden.
You have Gruden.
And then you got Derek Carr, who's, I mean, no one really knows too much about Derek Carr outside of maybe football. So, you know, that'll be kind of good to highlight a little bit.
You've got Khalil Mack. Oh, wait a minute. He doesn't play for him. You've got Amari Cooper. Oh, wait a minute. That's right. He doesn't play for him anymore. I still think the Raiders would probably be the one people would want to see because they just kind of, actually, the team that should be Hard Knocks should be the Jets because they seem like they're the most dysfunctional family in sports right now.
I would have thought they'd be a candidate. They have been on there before, but the all three of those teams would be compelling, I would say. They're all train wrecks.
Where's the Giants in this train wreck?
They are third. They are third. The Redskins, the Raiders, the Giants. Willie's looking for train wrecks. Lions and 49ers. That's your top five. 49ers are obviously a distant fifth. They're plus 900. What do you think about that, huh?
That's great info.
I think we could call it a day. Let's just go on and say,
you've done your duty. The listeners are now informed. They can go on with their Friday.
We'll come back with Sporting News Radio the rest of the day. We'll see you. Have a great weekend. Talk to you on Monday. I don't think they exist anymore, do they? They went away.
Okay, so speaking of early, okay, we have odds for, this is the madness, right? Odds for odds for Hard Knocks. And I see on our sheet here, Joe Lunardi has bracketology out.
I called it. He didn't call it the way too early bracketology, but this is the first one since, I think, April 8th that he's released. And so he has an early bracketology out, which is kind of weird because we're in May, but whatever.
But okay, well, how do you do this, though? How do you do bracketology? Everybody's 0-0.
You project, Willie. You project.
But he doesn't project. When he actually does bracketology, he does as of up to the moment, which is a flaw, in my opinion, of his bracketology, which is why there should be no bracketology until about February 15th, maybe February 1st. But so what does he base
this
on?
But he has a job to do, so he's going to keep
it. Why is it bracketology? Does he actually have brackets? Or is these are preseason predictions?
I think it's...
No, this is an actual Joe Lunardi ESPN bracket.
And this is the seed they would be?
Yes, currently.
Kentucky as a one seed.
Kentucky in the South region with the one seed.
Tennessee as a six seed.
Tennessee will be in the Midwest, Indianapolis.
So this is region. A six seed without Williams and Bone? That'd be a pretty good season.
And Admiral?
Yeah, well, we know they don't have
right,
him, but
that's what I'm saying.
Recent news, now you've lost all three of those guys.
That would be, I think, a great job
a
if
great
they were
job.
A six seed.
That's top 25.
Yeah. Here's what stood out to me, though. Wait for it. Are you sitting? Memphis, a four seed. A four seed. Well, we've been talking about the recruiting class. He's going to have the players. Now, what can he do with the players? That's what we're about to find out.
Well, that'll be what we need to see. They had their moments this past season. I don't know. I don't know who's coming back, who's not for the veteran players. But then you've got these high touted recruits that are going to come in there. They can be big difference makers. That's a pretty tough league, though. That's a deep league.
But they would
have
to have
Cincinnati looks like the year after
without little Mickey.
Yep, Temple's got a coaching change as well. You know, Johnny Dawkins. UCF had a great year last year. I'm guessing they'll be different, but there'll be a lot of intrigue. That will not be dull over at Memphis.
He also has them in the same region as Tennessee, so potentially setting up a matchup between Memphis and Tennessee.
Let's make sure we write that down.
Yeah, make sure you have the regions.
Yeah, I'm sure we're all going to remember that in February next year.
Midwest region, Indianapolis, book it.
So there you have it. I mean, you just can't get this stuff anywhere else. We just gave you the odds of
Joe
Hard Knocks.
Must be very bored.
Here's what's going to make you next year's bracketology.
Is there a guy at ESPN that says, Joe, we pay you, so just keep putting this stuff out all year round. You don't get to have these months off, even though nobody's playing.
Okay, Willie, here's what's going to frustrate you, because he has two teams on here that are kind of shocking to me. He has Arizona with all the turmoil going on as a four seed going into next season. And he currently has Michigan at 7, who does not have a coach right now.
Yeah, I don't see that.
Okay, Marquise, I want you to print this out, okay, just for the ridiculousness of it. And then when the bracket comes out next year, let's just see how close or far Joe is from this, quote, bracketology, May bracketology. I feel like ESPN is, like, written into his contract, you have to keep putting material out because we're paying you. Like, okay, today's May 16th. Today's May 17th, all right? So what about the June 17th bracketology? Does it change?
Things can happen in a month.
Guy twists an ankle in a summer league pickup
seriousness,
game?
I mean,
so they move from a 4 to a 5?
A month ago, John Beilein was the coach of Michigan. A month later, he's not.
Well,
so things do
so that
happen.
Affects his seat.
Yeah, and Joe Lunardi's last bracketology, which was on April 8th of 2019, he had Michigan as a one seed. So now they're a 7 seed.
When we come back, I will not project the PGA Championship, what it looks like in round 2. I will actually give you the results and what it looks like right now on day 2 of the 101st PGA Championship. To wrap up the first hour of Darren and Donick next. Day 2 PGA Championship. Bethpage Black up in New York. Brooks Koepka has not teed off yet. He is your current leader after yesterday's course record 63, 7 under. Second place, there's a grouping. Daniel Berger, who's through 16 today. He's minus 3 under. He shot a 70 yesterday.
Minus 3 under?
Or 3 under. That's all right. I don't know. I did that. That's redundant, isn't it?
Yeah, that was
minus 3 under.
Department of Redundancy Department.
I'll take redundancy for 400,
the
Alex.
SEC conference.
What is minus 3 under? Daniel Berger. 70 yesterday, so he's in a group with Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, and Tommy Fleetwood. And Fleetwood has not teed off yet. Dustin Johnson's through 13, Jordan Spieth through 13, and Kang also is in that group at 3 under through 14, and Kang shot a 68. Spieth and Johnson had 69. So yesterday, Fleetwood fired a 67. Danny Lee is 2-under with a group. Lorenzo Vera is 2-under. Luke List, who was up there at the top for a bit yesterday, he ended up shooting a 68. He'll tee off later today.
Anchor down. Luke List.
You never said that yesterday.
I should have.
When he was second.
Yeah, come
on. On the leaderboard.
Let's go. Doors.
How about that? Ricky Fowler is a little bit later today. He's 1-under. Kuchar is even. He's through 12 today. Shot a 70 yesterday. And let's see.
Tiger and Phil are both 2 over.
I was going to say, I'm scrolling.
Phil's 2 over through 12. Tiger is 2 over and yet to tee off.
Now, Phil is 3 over for the day. Yeah, good point. Okay. So we'll keep you posted.
Sned's 4 over yesterday, a 74. Brent Snedeker teeing off at 11:30.
Okay. How do you think, I think I'm going to be very curious to see, how do you think the Blues respond tonight after the controversy yesterday that we talked about a lot on the show? They've got to pick themselves up off the mat. They've got to get past that and say, we got hosed. But you know what? Nobody cares now at this point because game four is tonight. And if you lose, you're going back to Northern California in a deep, deep hole. So how do they get out of that? How do you think they respond?
I think they respond well. I thought they handled it well, all things considered.
They really did.
Petrangelo, I thought, was perfect. You know, he just kind of laughed at the question. He's like, you know, basically, you saw it. I mean, Craig Berube was similar on how he approached the issue. He goes, what did you think? So they didn't grandstand about it. They knew that the call was wrong. They didn't have to say anything. So I think that will help them move on to game four. I think they win tonight. I just think the game, it's going to game seven. Game seven in the Shark Tank, put it down.
You've been saying that.
Been saying it, staying with it.
So you don't think this affects them?
Well, it
at
affects
all.
Them. It screwed them out of a game or a chance to win a game. But they'll bounce back. I just think this is an even series, and it'll find its way deep. And St. Louis has been so good on the road, I like their chances in a road game seven.
I will say this. I've been really impressed with two teams in the Central Division. We talked about it when Colorado got hosed and how they handled it after the game. And to your point, I agree with you. I thought St. Louis, considering the circumstances, they handled it really well. They really did. I mean, they could have been a real sounding board for them to go nuts, and everybody would have understood, right? But I thought they did a good job. Now, you like you said, there was some Berube who was like, well, what do you think? Which is basically saying, we all know. You're asking me, but we all know. Come on.
But that's a tough place to be. The podium with all those people there, and
yeah.
They're all asking you. You have to have your words prepared because you can't win.
Let's hear Berube after game three. Let's hear him.
The Chief.
Chief, your frustration level, though, for a playoff game in overtime to end like that, how difficult is it? And the challenge of getting your team ready to play the next game?
Well, it's difficult to lose in overtime and playoffs anytime. And, you know, got to move on. Like, the team's got to move on. We all got to move on from it and get ready for game four. Really, that's all you can do. I mean, you know, we played a solid hockey game, but we're on the losing side of it. And there's nothing we can do about what happened. We just got to move on.
Back right.
Coach, can you give us an update on Vince Dunn and talk about how your defenseman played after?
Well, that wasn't the question.
That was not.
He was asked point blank about the play. And the question that was just asked, though, is a key question going forward because Vince Dunn is sneaky good.
Mm-hmm.
He is a critical. He and Rob Thomas, not Matchbox 20.
No, not him.
But he's going to become much more famous than the Max. You know, when he first comes into the league, oh, Rob Thomas, that's funny. Then all of a sudden you're like, darn, this guy's really good. So he's taken a big leap. Vince Dunn's another guy as a defenseman. He's made key plays. Did in the regular season, but he was kind of under the radar. I remember Hal Gill telling me right around the time they made the coaching change, he was like, that guy's good. Keep an eye on this guy. And sure enough, he was a catalyst. They moved him up in the order. They've got a deep defense core. But if they lose him, there's a drop-off there.
So does San Jose. This just in. They're kind of good on defense, too.
Well, it depends on what you mean by defense.
Okay, they have bigger names.
Well, Brent Burns and Eric Carlson are elite offensive defensemen, even though that was strange that Eric Carlson had not scored a goal since December. Yeah. That is odd.
Mm-hmm.
But he had an injury
plague
deal.
Mm-hmm.
But he scored two the other night. But he still is a playmaker, right? But he can be exploited some in the defensive end. Same thing with Burns.
Oh, if you watch Carlson enough, absolutely.
Yeah. So it depends on what you're looking for in your defense
Which
core.
Is part of why I say Vince Dunn need to watch the rest of the league because these are things you will catch if you watch other players. Like if you're a hockey fan and you just really follow the Predators, you hear Eric Carlson, you know he's a superstar. He's a big name in the league. But if you don't watch him, you don't realize, he makes some really boneheaded plays sometimes.
Well, he takes chances.
It's a little bit he has some bad turnovers.
Yeah, it's a little bit like P.K. Subban. This is always a tough thing for a defenseman is when you're creative and you have the ability to go up ice and make plays, then there's a price to pay sometimes when you take some risk. But you come out ahead with brilliant players like that. Dunn is an offensive defenseman. Among some of the giants that they have, like Parayko and Petrangelo is a big, strong guy. Dunn gives you a little more skill. He quarterbacks their power play some, so their power play will be affected. And the power play has been struggling some for the Blues. So you lose him if they lose him, and it looked bad, right?
It did look bad.
He lost some teeth. He got hit right in the jaw. He kind of lost his bearings there.
Did not come
back.
You
worry about the C word, right?
Yep. No doubt. All right. So that's game 4 tonight in St. Louis. We'll come back, kick off the second hour with Richard Deitch from The Athletic. That's next.